Exposing government corruption, defending our suspended constitution, demanding the rights of we the people, broadcasting the truth, the Puppet Media Dare Not Report. Long live liberty and death to the New World Order. Prepare yourself. This is the Alternative Media with your host, Farron.
Hello and welcome to the Alternative Media. This is your Saturday broadcast where we discuss current events, politics, the disinformation, lies, deceit, and propaganda, the mainstream corporate-owned puppet media, and the fact that the federal government of the United States no longer has any resemblance whatsoever of representation of we the people. It is Saturday, March 7th, 2015. We're in hour two of the broadcast. I'm going to be joined by Deanna Spingola. She has authored two books on quilt design. That was one thing I did not know about Deanna. She investigates government and corporate corruption as it relates to the faltering liberties of American citizens and war-targeted populations of other countries. She's not afraid to address controversial issues, and that's an understatement. She's been working on a trilogy since January 2009. She has published the first one in April 2011 and the second one in June of 2012. The third book is now available on Amazon. And also, she published Screening Sandy Hook. We're joined by Deanna Spingola. How are you doing today, ma'am?
I'm just fine. And you?
I'm doing good. And I am really honored to have you joining me today. I've been looking forward to it. Deanna, I had listened to several of your broadcasts over the years, but I caught one, and time flies, I'm not exactly sure when it was. It was probably about a month and a half ago, and you were discussing some of what had happened in Germany during the war, post-war, and you also mentioned something that I was not aware of. You mentioned a documentary film called The Greatest Story Never Told, and I started watching it, and then I caught you filling in for John Stattmiller, and that was a really, really great broadcast. And sadly, I think that broadcast wasn't archived because I went back. I wanted to share it with some friends, and it's a wealth of information. And before we get into that, whenever I have a guest for the first time, and I just asked John this a couple of weeks ago, and I found his answer just is so interesting. But I've got to ask you, what first led you, Deanna, to question things, to investigate for yourself, ultimately led you into activism, becoming an author, a radio host? The question is, what really sparked your interest or woke you up that something was drastically wrong in this country?
Actually, I started waking up after I read a book several years ago entitled None Dare Call It Conspiracy by Gary Allen. And soon thereafter, I joined the John Birch Society. And that was during the period of time when they were saying, oh, we've got to get out of the UN. And I was living in California at the time. And I was very active in the society. I was the secretary, and so I was very active, but it just seemed like they weren't being very effective. And then when I tried to talk to my friends about what was going on, they just didn't have any time to talk about that kind of thing. They weren't interested. And I felt like I was, some of them really kind of marginalized me and started going the opposite direction. I also got interested at that point in time in healthy eating and grinding my own wheat, making my own bread, making, you know, just kind of trying to help my family be healthier. I made yogurt and all kinds of things.
That is, I have read that book, None Dare Call It a Conspiracy, and if for those out there, if you've never read that, that is a very, very interesting, a very interesting read. I always find it fascinating. I've never had anyone mention that book as coming across that book and reading it, and I always find it interesting, various activists that we run across doing this, what made them say, aha, something. Waco was my wake-up call, and since then, my life changed. April 19th, 1993, it never was the same after those events unfolded, and so that's That is interesting, Deanna. I wanted, and I know an hour is just a is such a short amount of time to cover all these topics, but when you were on filling in for John Stadtmuller, you went into what had actually happened in Dresden. And I don't have to tell you, but for listeners, growing up watching war movies, watching the way the media portrays the German people, Nazis. Listen to this, Deanna. The other day I was flipping through the channels, and Wonder Woman was on. It was the real-life version. I forget the lady's name, but you know what I'm talking about. The real person that played Wonder Woman, the TV show. And she was battling Nazis.
Everyone seems to be battling the Nazis even today in the alternative media. And we really don't have anything to fear from them. They're gone. They're certainly some of them did escape. They left the country. The entire country was denazified, re-educated. Allies went in. Burned all of the books that were created after 1933 that were relevant to the ideology of National Socialism. And Nazi actually is not a word that they used to describe themselves, but it is a word that the Allies created to describe the National Socialist in Germany. And regarding the opportunity that I had to substitute for John, RBN, the one of the board ops, was kind enough to share the audio with me, because when I was subbing, and for a couple of days there, the automatic gizmo, the apparatus that they used to automatically put the audio files into the archives, was not working. But I do have those audio files at my website, spingola.com. And if you just click on the radio schedule button on the left-hand side, you can visit that date. I can't remember exactly what date it was. I'll look here real quick. That was in February. And I did post those. That was Thursday, February 12th, and I subbed for John Stadtmuller, and I do have both hours posted at my website, MP3 files, thanks to one of the board ops.
Well, excellent. I will go there, get that, and post it on my website as well. I would like and we're going to get into that here shortly. And I'm glad you made mention of, because one of my questions I was going to ask you, Deanna, was there is some so-called prominent members of the so-called truth movement that, and I don't know when this began, it seems somewhat recent, where they started saying that the Nazis are running and are behind the New World Order. And I wanted to get your opinion on that, because when I've heard that, and I've heard it on some shows that I really wouldn't have thought I would heard of, I think that is the most laughable conjecture I've ever heard.
Well, the New World Order was not something that the National Socialists created. In fact, it was created a long time before Hitler was born. It was created decades ago, centuries ago, but came to fruition in about 1848, they made a really big stand for it. And, of course, that was the Marxist revolutions. And even Marx was not the initiator of the ideology behind the communist revolutions in Europe. But we could start there, and that's pretty much where Book 1 starts. Actually, it starts a few decades before that. But in 1848, there were a lot of revolutions in Europe, Marxist revolutions, and they were not successful. They were not successful in taking over Germany at that point in time. So a lot of the Marxists left Europe, and they came over to the United States, and then there was a revolution. Excuse me. Then there was a revolution here, which really was very, very successful. And that revolution, of course, is now referred to as the Civil War, which is a misnomer because a civil war is two factions of a country fighting for the control of a centralized government. And that was not what the so-called Civil War was about. It was a Marxist revolution, and it was the attack by the North against the South. And I talk about this in my first book of the series. That is what it was, and it was very successful. And as I said, a lot of the people who were unsuccessful in establishing Marxist countries in Europe emigrated to the United States and fought on the side of the North. There were also some people who fought against the Marxists in the North and were in the Confederate Army. And so that I cover that in The Ruling Elite, A Study in Imperialism, Genocide, and Emancipation. And I talk about who is in charge, and actually when you look at book one, many of the people that a lot of people consider heroes weren't really heroes at all, but were exploitive. They were instrumental in preparing the country for a revolution. Andrew Jackson, actually, when he was president, turned over the appointed the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, as their correspondent bank in Europe. And that, I have documents. I referred to the documents in book one. And so some of the so-called people that others in the truth movement refer to as heroes really weren't so heroic and were actually just instrumental in implementing a corporatocracy in the United States, which occurred following the so-called Civil War, and allowed big business, which of course is multinational now, to take over and to have more influence in the country. And then of course each war has made those multinational corporations much larger, much more instrumental, and any war is really about seizing resources, whether you're talking about intellectual resources or whether you're talking about natural resources, water, oil, and that kind of thing. But when you look at the so-called Civil War and recognize that only two battles actually took place in the South or in the North, that all the battles took place in the South. And it was a devastation. It was the first time in history, well, not in modern history, it was the first time in modern history that people engaged in total warfare. And by what I mean by total warfare is warfare against the citizens. Before the so-called Civil War, the opposing factions would engage in a battle on a regular designated battlefield where you only had soldiers. Soldiers were killing soldiers. But in the so-called Civil War, the North actually marched through the South, destroyed food production, destroyed the harvest that had already been taken in. They destroyed farms. They destroyed farm animals. They burned down barns. They killed at least 50,000 civilians during that war. And of course, you also had disease and you had camps. Of course, we've all heard of Andersonville and the starvation that took place there. And that was one of the Confederate Army camps. And of course, the reason you had starvation there was because of the of the sanctions against the South by the North, where the South actually depended quite a bit on imports from England, and those imports were halted. And so you had a lot of starving people in the South, including the prisoners. And you see the same kind of thing in other countries that the United States has engaged in warfare against, including the Civil War, or not the Civil War, but the Spanish-American War, which was started by a false flag. And I cover all of this and who was behind this warfare in the trilogy.
You know, that's really interesting, Deanna, because a lot of times when you listen to broadcasts like this, everyone kind of points to this whole conspiracy started in 1913 with the establishment of the Federal Reserve. Or some go back to 1871, the Congressional Act of 1871. But I did not know. Is that kind of where your book begins, is with the events unfolding in the Civil War?
The first book of the trilogy, A Study in Imperialism, Genocide, and Emancipation, starts, let me just share a couple of chapter titles with you. Let's see. Here we go. I talk about British Zionism let me get the right PDF up here. I start with the banking. The first section is called The Banking and Industrial Elite and how banking was conceived. I talk about the Rothschilds. I talk about their gold operations, which are very, very important, that they really took over gold. They were in California. They were in Spain. They took over the quicksilver mining, which, of course, is mercury. So quicksilver is mercury. They knew all about the dangers of quicksilver, mercury, and they used cheap labor in their mining operations. I talk about globalism and banking and about how the other countries who had been closed to globalism were opened up during this period of time by globalists. I talk about the Bank of the United States and New York City and how it was the center of mercantilism and how the South was really just a profitable colony of the North. And the North always exploited the South, which was they had a different mentality there. And there was only about 5% of the people in the South who really owned slaves. And so the whole idea of slavery was vilified, not that I believe in slavery or condone it, but the slavery was vilified by the upcoming industrialist in the North. Now, the people in the North who were running factories and whatnot, for instance, when the Irish, I talk a little bit about Ireland also, and about the famine in Ireland. The famine in Ireland was deliberate. It was caused by England, really, who imported a lot of things out of Ireland, because Ireland had been had given up their form of self-government to the Brits, and so there was a deliberate famine there. Millions of people died. About a million workers came over to the United States. They worked in New York in these brand new factories. And if one of the laborers got hurt, well, they were out the door. They were kicked out of their rat-infested tenements that were run by some of these factory owners. But in the South, when you were a slave and you were too old to work, well, you still kept your log cabin. You were kept alive with you were treated as actually part of the family. So it was quite different, and it's all been kind of misconstrued and changed, altered. And of course the South was more Bible oriented, where the North was pretty socialistic. And this was that's what I talk about in book one. And I talk about the difference between mercantilism and agrarianism. And mercantilism is exploiting the worker, where the agrarians, the people who were tied to the land, were independent. They were independent farmers. Farmers were taking care of their own families. But then you had this great big movement away from the farm, away from the land, which was, of course, carried out later when you had, during the 30s here in this country, where you had the beginning of factory farming, which I talk about in, I believe it's book three. But you don't have to own all three books in order to get the idea of what occurred. But I think it's a good idea if you do, but if you don't, that's they're still self-contained books. In fact, the chapters within each book can be read independently without depending on another chapter in order to understand exactly what I talk about in each particular chapter. But you had the elite. You had their secret societies, the Philoxian Society, Society of Cincinnati. I talk a little bit about the Illuminati. I talk about Columbus. I talk about the emancipation of the Jews, the slave trading, all kinds of things. Now, I no longer carry book one, but you can purchase it from Amazon. I'm unable to be too competitive with Amazon because in order to do that, I would have to buy 100 books, and quite frankly, I'm not into the book distribution business. So,
let me ask you this question: you know, when we talk about World War II, of course, the most prominent information that people have is 6 million Jews killed. That's all you hear. That's all that's on the news. That's always what the movies are about. You had went into some of the unknown information. It was news to me about some of the atrocities committed against the German people during and after the war. And also, you had recanted the events, and it was news to me, of what had occurred in Dresden. And I think that is just vital. Now, I'm of German descent, and I almost am now to the point to I'm fighting mad when everything coming and going is derogatory about the German people. So I wanted to ask you to tell us a little bit through your research, maybe some of the things people wouldn't be aware of what actually the fate of the German people after the war. And of course, you know, no one discusses Stalin killing 40 million people. It's always the 6 million Jew figure, which I'm sure you probably can shed some light on that as well. But go ahead and tell us your thoughts on that. I thought there was a break at 20 after, but maybe not.
Right. Well, first of all, there were never, ever, ever 6 million Jews under German jurisdiction in Europe. There were more Jews after the war, according to the census figures that I cite in Book 3, than there were before. They are the only ethnic group that increased during the war. All the other groups decreased. 50 million people were slaughtered during World War II. But the only people that we ever hear about, if you were to ask somebody, how many people were killed in Europe during World War II, people would not be able to answer that question. If you ask them, oh, how many Jews were killed in World War II, you would get the answer, well, the Germans killed, they gassed 6 million Jews. Now, this myth actually started before World War I, and I covered this in Book 3. It is part of their religious dogma that 6 million have to be burned before the Jews can return to Palestine. And so that is where the myth lies. It is the dogma that they use for going into Palestine, uprooting the people that had been there forever, for ages, for decades. And when you're talking about who the Jews are, and I cover this in book two, the people that have invaded Palestine and are now waging war against people who have lived there for centuries are not Jews. They are not descended from the tribe of Judah. They are what is referred to as Khazars. And I cover that in book two, where I talk about, the Zionist seizure of world power. But as far as the vendetta against the German people, I believe, and I've covered this in book three, that the real genesis of this began on September 11th through the 12th at a meeting that was held in Dresden. And this meeting was attended by all of the European countries, and the meeting had to do with what they were going to do about the Jews. And so they had this meeting. They had it in Dresden. And like I say, there are probably 35 countries, European countries, delegates. They attended from all over Europe. And as a result of this meeting, and it was as I said, I talk about it in my book, it was the first anti-Jewish Congress. And this was about the same time that the Russians tried to enforce the May Laws of 1882, where many of the Jews relocated to Poland. And Poland actually became the European country, that had the most Jews. They had about 10% Jewish population before World War II. So anyway, you had this first anti-Jewish Congress, which was actually a movement of self-protection. They convened in Dresden, as I said, on September 11th through the 12th. And so after this meeting, there were some anti-Semitic feelings, which also erupted in Poland. And that's also you also had a lot of anti-Semitism after the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. But I think that is the reason they went after Dresden, because Dresden was not a military target. It should never have been a military target.
We're coming up on the break, Deanna. Hold that thought. We'll cover Dresden on the other side of the break. You're listening to The Alternative Media with Farron, joined by Deanna Spingola. We're back on The Alternative Media, Farron in the studio, joined by Deanna Spingola. And Deanna, I wanted to say, you know, a lot of people think that the creation of Israel came about at the end of World War II. Now, the Balfour Treaty, or the Balfour Declaration, tells us this was in the works long before Hitler ever came to power. And also, I wanted to say, a lot of people are not aware that Hitler broke free from the international banking cartels. He broke free from the Jewish-run banks, and that played a significant role into him being on the hit list of the powers that be. I wanted to say all that. You're welcome to comment on that, and I wanted you to go ahead and tell us a little bit about Dresden, because this was news to me, and I think there's a lot of listeners that would feel the same way.
All right. Yes, the Balfour Declaration was in 1917, actually before the war ever ended. And the reason that the United States was conned into coming into the First World War was because certain Jewish interest here in this country promised the Brits that they would bring in the United States on certain conditions. And of course, the whole Zionist movement began long before World War One. I mean, it took years to build up to this, and I do talk about that in the Zionist seizure of world power. But as far as people saying, oh, Hitler was out to conquer the world, no, he was not out to conquer the world. When you look at the land that Britain owned prior, the British government controlled, and of course we've all heard the phrase, the sun never sets on British soil. And it's because they were the imperialists. They were the globalists. And Hitler wanted to reverse the Versailles Treaty. And when he joined the very, very small party, the NSDAP party, he was against some of the treaties that the government, the Weimar government, had signed. He was against the Dawes plan. He was against the Young plan. He was against, of course, the Versailles Treaty, because the Versailles Treaty took land that had been German land, German-speaking occupied land for centuries. The Versailles Treaty literally gave all this land to other people. It destroyed what was the what used to be the German speaking land, created Czechoslovakia, and I mean it was just awful, and took away the Ruhr land, which was a lot of the where the natural resources were. So he wanted to reverse that treaty, and he also by the end of World War One, Germany was, well, they had to pay all these reparations. They did not start World War One. They were conned into it by a false flag that was conceived by the United States and by Britain, and the people who were in charge of naval operations at that time were Winston Churchill and Franklin D. Roosevelt. And they played the same implemental role in World War II when they were both head of a government. Winston Churchill, they got the establishment in Britain, got rid of Chamberlain, and installed Winston Churchill, who became the Prime Minister on May 10th of 1940. And he immediately started warfare, night raids against German citizens and the farms, the villages. And the British couldn't penetrate German airspace during the day. So they did all of these night raids. And they raided every country. They dropped bombs on every country, every city in Germany that had at least 50,000 people. They were out to destroy all of these cities in Germany. And one of the first air raids was on Cologne. They called it Operation Millennium on May 30th, 31st, 1942. The Allies used 1,000 airplanes with 1,455 tons of bombs, mostly incendiaries, that generated over 2,500 fires just in Cologne. Okay? They firebombed Hamburg, the port city, had a population of 1,150,000. Thousands of civilians were roasted alive in temperatures of 1,000 degrees. Germany was formerly the most highly industrialized nation in Europe. Hitler got rid of the banks, and the Jewish bankers did not fund Hitler. That was a myth that was created by the Jews. They did not fund him. In fact, he got rid of them. He said, out. Out with the Jewish bankers. The Nuremberg Laws were instituted, which, because, well, quite frankly, the Jews, after World War I, had gone into Germany, had picked up a lot of land, pennies on the dollar, or marks on, you know, just for almost nothing. They became very influential in the theater, in the media, in medicine, in just about in the law. They were the professors at the universities. And these were aliens. These were not citizens of Germany. And so they went after Hamburg. Getting back to the war, they went after Hamburg, and they called that Operation Gomorrah. And Chief Air Marshal Arthur Harris devised a strategy of coordinated attacks with the United States Army Air Force. Just in Hamburg, they dropped almost 8,000 tons of regular and incendiary bombs. These created huge fires with air temperatures as much as 1,800 degrees and 155 mile per hour winds that burned everything in its path, cars, asphalt, trees. Everything fueled the fire in Hamburg, including people. This firestorm in Hamburg alone incinerated 50,000 people. Some sources say it's 40,000, but either way, it was literally genocide. And the fact that the RAF, years later, erected a bronze statue of Harris at a church is absolutely egregious. Absolutely egregious. They destroyed, the Allies destroyed all of the cities that had over 50,000 people. Then they started targeting smaller cities.
And isn't it true, Deanna, that Hitler tried to delay bombing any cities in Great Britain or in London because he saw them as a white race? He didn't want to bomb civilian targets.
Exactly. He had participated in World War I. He knew exactly how deadly, how awful war was. The Brits made 8 bombing raids on Berlin before Hitler did a bombing raid on London.
Did from your
it was at least 3 months.
From your investigation, did Hitler live? Did he live past the supposed suicide in Berlin?
I do not believe he did. Now, there's a lot of there's certain faction that says that has been making the rounds of many of the alternative radio programs, saying that he went to Argentina, that he lived after the war, but there were eyewitnesses that were there, and the fact that the response that he had after World War I and all of the things that he did for the country, I do not believe that it would have been characteristic of him to leave the country, but to remain with the citizens that he had fought for and with for all that time. So no, I do not believe that he escaped from Argentina.
Let me ask. Go ahead. You think he died there in Berlin, the suicide?
Yes.
Let me ask you this, and I know we're running out of time. We've only got about 15 minutes left, and I wanted to get a little bit of your opinion. When we fast forward to today, and we see what's happening in America, and I mean, we could run down a whole list, but the NSA spying, torture, rendition, Obama just executive order banning bullets last week, illegal mass invasion, open southern border, our declining economy. I wanted to get your perspective while I had you on the air. what you see happening in this country and what you foresee happening. But I guess we can put the context before Obama's term is up the next 2 years, because doing this broadcast, and it's probably the same for you, watching the news, keeping track on what's going on, it is painting a pretty bleak picture for America with regards to what we just see and happening internationally, nationally, and with this the Republicans and the Democrats. I wanted to get your opinion on what you see happening in America and where you think we're going.
If you compared National Socialism and what they were doing compared to what is going on in America, you have absolutely open immigration. Now, in Germany, they pretty much closed the borders. They prevented immigration because the party felt that the people, the Germans, should be the factors for the resources in the country. He helped the farmers, got rid of the bankers, got rid of the middlemen, so that the farmers could actually make a living on their land. He reclaimed land that was swampy or not fertile, and created fertile land. Didn't turn over the land or the farming to factory farms or anything like that. And I believe, of course, and it has been since FDR, that this is really a communist country, and that with the seizure of guns, of course they don't want the citizens to own guns, but we have more guns in this country than any other country. And that's another fallacy that people have been spreading, that Hitler banned guns. No, he did not. In fact, he increased the options of people who wanted to own guns. People had more guns than they did before Hitler. And so that's another fallacy. There's a lot of fallacies if you make a comparison. Now, I'm not saying that you could make this country a national socialist country, because it was not that particular program was not for exportation, and because also we are so multicultural now, and that is a deliberate situation that occurred at the end of the 1800s with open immigration policies. And then, of course, you had the immigration policies that were changed in 1965. So what we see now is the fruition of many, many, many decades, beginning after the so-called Civil War, to the point that we are at now, where you have the complete takeover, the complete control of everyone. If you look at Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, that literally takes your jurisdiction over your own body and places it within the government. And I talk about this in my Sandy Hook book. So what you have now is, well, the complete communist takeover. There's more freedom in China to travel about than there is in America now. When I was in China in 2007, we did not have to take off our shoes and turn in our water and do all this other nonsense at the airport. We were free to get on the plane. There was freedom. And when you consider, and I talked to some of the Chinese there, and it was a small minority in China that were communists, like 200 out of the whole government. And what you have with the Democrats and the Republicans, they're two wings of the same vulture. They're both operating with each other. It's orchestrated opposition. You are going to get, no matter who you vote for, and whoever you vote, if people still vote, whoever you vote for are the people that have been placed in front of you. We do not have a choice of who to vote for. Those people are chosen for us. We would be better off if we could select somebody out of the phone book. We would be much better off. But when you look at the warfare, I mean, didn't Obama say that that he would be bringing the troops home? Well, that's not happening. The troops are still over there. You're going to have warfare in the Middle East in behalf of the Israeli state, no matter who is in power.
It is just amazing. I mean, we did a story last week about how many years since the inception of this country we have been at some form of war, and it turned out it had only been like 23 years out of the over 200 that there was even any peace. We're coming up on a break. You're listening to The Alternative Media, joined by Deanna Spangola. We'll wrap it up on the other side. Stay with us. We're back on The Alternative Media Fair, and in the studio, joined by Deanna Spangola, the website deannaspangola.com.
It's actually spangola.com.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. Are there any books in your future?
I'm taking a little break.
You maybe deserve a little break.
Maybe just a little break. 4 books in 5 years is kind of a lot.
Wow, that is a phenomenal feat. And these are not small books. These are large books packed with information. And I wanted to thank you for joining me today. You've got just a wealth of knowledge on these topics, and I'd like to have you again back and maybe go in a little more to the Civil War. I did not know a lot of that aspect of that event. So I want to thank you for all of the work you do, for your activism, authoring books, doing a radio broadcast here on RBN, and any contact information, anything you'd like to give out. We've got about 2 minutes.
All righty. People can contact me via my website, which is spangola.com. I also have another website, screeningsandyhook.com, and people can also listen to audio files at spangolaspeaks.net, which is run by a friend of mine who does a fabulous job. He's just terrific, just a wonderful person. And anyway, they can contact me via those websites. And you were talking about the war. I mean, we've been engaged in warfare since Mexican-American War in 1846, and the Rothschilds made a lot of money from that war. So it goes back a long way, and we've been fighting ever since then. Well, the U.S. military and the people behind the U.S. government have been implementing warfare across the globe since then.
And you know, Deanna, the events of 9/11, it just worked. It worked perfectly for the powers that be to justify taking our rights at home and unlimited, perpetual war with whomever they choose. And that is exactly what we've seen in the last decade and a half. And it's going to continue that way. My message on this broadcast has turned more to telling people to prepare, because rough times are here and rougher times are coming.
Exactly. With the Morgenthau plan was to deindustrialize Germany. Well, that's exactly what we have here. We have the Morgenthau plan because the United States has been deliberately deindustrialized.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And in just the last couple of decades, we have witnessed manufacturing in this area that I'm in North Carolina just shuttering their doors. And even our malls. I mean, it is... the TV can say whatever it wants to about the economy, but if you ride around with your eyes open, it paints a much different picture, and I'm sure it's probably that way where you're at as well.
Absolutely, and then you look at the infrastructure.
And the raising the debt ceiling is the next political theater, and I will do my prognostication that after all the useless lip service, they will raise it.
Of course.
It's really an amazing story when you put it all together, and you put together, you know, the NSA revelations. Broadcasts like yours were saying this years ago, but now it's all out. It's all came to fruition, but there's really very little of an outcry, and it's just going to continue. And that's why, books like yours is so important. It's information people don't get other places. And hey, thank you so much for joining me today, and you have a great day, ma'am.
You too. Thank you for asking me.
Spingola.com. We'll be back top of the hour taking your phone calls next hour, 1-800-313-9443.